Intervju Radija Študent.
Zdrav terminu za Ereš intervju. Danes z nami je ena zelo zanimiva zasedba A Place to Bury Strangers. Z nami je pa zato, ker zvečer nastop v Channel Zero. Začne se ob 21.30 s predskupino, potem kakšno urco poznaj nastopijo A Place to Bury Strangers. Zdaj pa kar pozdravljam v studiju z mano Oliver in pa Dion. Hi guys.
Hey, how's it going?
I was actually expecting just Oliver, because I thought that you were maybe a spokesman, kind of, for the band.
More recently, Dion and I have been working together on a lot of stuff, so it's kind of...
Yeah, Dion, you've been in a band, part of a band, for quite some years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, almost 4 years, yeah.
You know, I didn't introduce the band. I usually introduce, I say a bit about the band style-wise or genre-wise, but this time I didn't, because, you know, if you open the Wikipedia site, it says noise rock, shoegaze, stuff like that, but in one of the interviews I read, Oliver, I think it was you who said that you kind of play a really messed up pop music. Is that still how you feel about your music?
I think so. Some of these are maybe messed up rock music or something like that. The, you know, it's not really noise rock, and we don't really associate so much with the shoegaze genre as much as I feel like the kind of movement that's continued on with that kind of music. So, and I'm a big fan of old pop music, which, I mean, maybe includes stuff like punk and other things as well at this point, but... you know, these genres don't really mean anything, you know, for most of these things. So, at least not anymore, you know. What is grunge or whatever, you know, so.
Yeah, and I think from release to release, it, what we do kind of shifts around a little bit. I mean, a lot of people say maybe it doesn't, but that's maybe because there's also a common thread within the band that is maybe through all the releases.
I think that changed a bit with the last album, Strange Moon, that was released this year, because you did covers of Dead Moon songs.
Yeah.
And you know, before that, maybe you were more connected to this British side of music, as you mentioned, shoegaze and mm-hmm. stuff that happened in post-punk mm-hmm. and stuff like that, maybe darkwave. Jesus and Mary Chain, obviously, was a big inspiration. But then, on the other side, it was Dead Moon as well, so I'm interested, you know, how much of an inspiration was the British side of alternative rock and pop music, and how much the American side?
I think when I was younger, there was like a big influence on British music. I grew up in a small town in the US and just kind of, you know, fell in love with bands like Jesus and Mary Chain and My Bloody Valentine and Slow Dive and the Cocteau Twins. But that was kind of, you know, at an early age, and it was just kind of a starting point for even discovering a lot of other music. But maybe right when I first started playing guitar, you know, I was really inspired by the way that these bands would make a guitar not sound like a guitar. And I wasn't a trained guitar player or anything, but I could make noises with a guitar and make it sound like a whale or whatever, or something, or chainsaws. And that was kind of really exciting to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I've always been really fascinated with American music myself, because I'm not from America, I'm from New Zealand.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, and also a lot of the British sounding, or the British bands that tried to emulate the American sound too. I mean, I've always been a fan of that as well, so mm-hmm. maybe that's, you know.
You were in like more traditional rock bands when you were in New Zealand still?
More sort of punk, garagey bands, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you brought that side maybe into this new aesthetic, a place to Barry Stranger.
It definitely influences it, I think so, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe you can tell us a bit, because we know about Oliver and what kind of music he was listening to growing up. Maybe mm-hmm. you can tell us a bit what music was that.
Well, I mean, for example, Dead Moon, when I was...
So this was your idea to do this cover?
No, it was actually his idea. But when I was very young, 19 or something, one of my good friends who used to manage my early band brought Dead Moon to New Zealand. And I met them, actually, and subsequently he would bring them every few years, and my band, all my different bands throughout the years would play with Dead Moon and tour with Dead Moon in New Zealand. So I got to know those guys fairly well. So a lot of that kind of stuff, the garagey stuff, mm-hmm. even a lot of stuff from New Zealand, you know, from the 60s and 70s.
What about Australian music? They're well known for rock music.
Sure, I mean, there's a lot of great Australian stuff that influenced me, but I also, I don't know, I looked back towards, you know, New Zealand, music too, because not many people know about that, and that's kind of where I came from, and I know it was interesting for me to delve into that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of small bands in the early 90s that I would play with that no one's ever heard of. That
can you maybe name the most popular New Zealand rock band?
Ever?
I don't think
the best, the most popular. The
most popular, maybe in recent years. Because I don't think I know of any.
I mean, Split Enz were a pretty popular band. I mean, Crowded House.
do you, Oliver, know any of
Crowded
these bands?
House
yeah, they had a big American hit. And there's a few bands recently. There's a girl from right near where I grew up called, I think her stage name is Lordy. Or Lord, I'm not too sure how you pronounce it, but she's recently had a number one hit in the United States, which is, I think, number one at the moment. Mm-hmm. Which is, so that's
something.
Is that something?
I know some more kind of alternative or underground electronic music from New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, you have the Flying Nun scene too, which was very influential. Mm-hmm. You know, in the early 80s, bands like The Clean, The Bats, The Chills. Mm-hmm. It would influence people like The Pavement would be a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Even Sonic Youth.
Oliver, you earlier mentioned when I was talking about the British side of music that kind of inspired you in the beginning, and you said that you are more interested in the things that continue from that point, you know, from the 80s or what was happening in the 80s. And to me, my perception is that, you know, for a certain moment, maybe 5 years or so, this all this music, Jesus and Mary Chain, My Bloody Valentine and stuff like that, was really popular, became really popular almost all of a sudden. And then suddenly as it got popular, it kind of vanished,
yeah.
You know. So what kind of thing were you thinking of when you said that it's still continuing?
Well, at that, I feel like that kind of music was even sort of like punk at the time, you know, another sort of, you know, moment of punk music that was going where they're destroying, you know, whatever was popular in the music scene. And that's what was like so exciting about these bands and, you know, kind of venturing off into new sort of, you know, genres and areas. And maybe I didn't know that at the time, but, you know, that's what's kind of really exciting is, you know, taking music and going against the grain and kind of, you know, destroying or developing something that's kind of new and sort of exciting. And yeah, that's, you know, where that music was at that time. And you know, I think that the things that have come out, a lot of the stuff that's come out of these bands is, you know, really poor and kind of, you know,
because I don't know if I could name any bands that really came out of that kind of scene, you know, that, I mean, maybe recently, in recent year, like bands,
yeah,
especially in America, like Soft Moon and Tropic of Cancer and stuff like that.
I mean, I think
the Body Strangers, yeah, obviously.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's even bands that I think nobody even heard of. And being, you know, musician around these times in the 90s, you know, there were these bands that were coming up that were doing like watered down, crummy versions of a lot of these things. And so maybe I just saw it in like the smaller scenes of music that was traveling around, but it was depressing.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that recently, maybe 5-6 years ago, both Jesus and Mary Chain and My Bloody Valentine came back, like after 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jesus and Mary Chain a few less years, mm-hmm, but still they came back. And it seems that they are more popular now than they were back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that this music is sort of coming back or think...
I don't know if it is, honestly.
It's more a nostalgic kind of thing.
I think so. I think people were like, oh, I missed seeing the Jesus and Mary Chain or something. And I mean, the Jesus and Mary Chain, if you see them live now, they're just terrible. You know, and My Bloody Valentine...
Well, we saw them, My Bloody Valentine, and I thought I liked it quite a bit.
Oh, no, they're great. They are still cool. And I think that, like, their new record is okay and good or whatever, but it's not really in the next step of them as a band. So maybe with another record after this, if it's going to happen, but who knows. But I feel like they kind of ended their momentum in some ways, at least for me as a recording artist.
To me, they're still their music is still so unique, you know, that
totally.
It didn't really bother me that it sounds like it could be made like 20 years ago. Or...
Yeah, no, exactly. It was still a great record and it's still cool.
I mean,
and nobody's doing
anything. You can't
like
really
that.
Blame these bands either for, you know, not being popular at the time, and suddenly 20 years later, they've had some popularity and people have discovered them and, you know, a yearning for them, and they rejoin and do something. You can't really blame those bands for, you know, kind of cashing in on that.
What I found interesting with My Bloody Valentine after seeing them live, because this was my first time seeing them live, was, you know, when you listen even the new album, it's kind of more polished sound, even compared to Loveless maybe.
Yeah.
But when you hear them live, they're still as brutal as they were probably 20 years ago. You know, they don't make any compromises. They still play noisy stuff
over the pop
melodies and stuff like that.
I mean, I think even back in the day, because I used to have a few live My Bloody Valentine records, and they were even more messy. So it's probably more precisely that aggressive noise than they were before. I think they were younger and didn't know exactly what they were doing, and some of those things are completely out of control and messed up. And so now I think they're playing what they always intended to do back in the day, you know, so.
As cool. For A Place to Bury Strangers, you kind of like that messy moment in your music? You do?
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
we embrace those things.
Me and Oliver especially really like raw, stuff that just sounds like it's come out of the gutter, it kind of is evil sounding, in a real way, not sort of faked.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be hard to create that. Once you've been a musician for a long time, you learn a lot. And sometimes that learning can be a little bit, that can take away from that side of, you know, that mess.
You have to get so fucked up in some way where you can just lose yourself and get out of control. And not like with drugs or anything like that, but, you know, we do this with like volume and vision and all sorts of things, you know, lights and crazy things, which kind of transform what's going on into where you lose your mind, really.
Mm-hmm. And opposed to My Bloody Valentine, who I just said that they're kind of trying to do two different things, on one on record and one in live context, you try to kind of put what you play live into the studio.
It's very hard.
It's usually completely different. And we focus what we're doing on the record is meant to be a record, and what we play live is meant to be live. So it's two separate things. But we're actually working on a fourth record right now, and we're trying to attempt to somehow capture like the feeling and the emotion behind our live show in this record. So we'll see how that goes.
Can you tell me what is interesting, maybe one of the more interesting things apart from the noise you play on top of your music, is that you have a really strong sense of this more pop melodies, maybe pop sounding melodies or pop sensibility. And I remember I saw one interview you, Oliver, did, I forgot with who, but you were talking about Sonic Youth and their first album and how you didn't like their second and third one, I think, or maybe some later ones where they went more into the pop kind of sound. But doing this, they lost that edge maybe that they had on the first record. So you're kind of trying to combine the edginess and the pop sensibility yourself, or?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I don't know. I'm a sucker sometimes for some pop. It just, some people can kind of make it work and some people don't. It's like, what is a really good song and what's not? And maybe for Sonic Youth, you know, that wasn't the right direction for them to kind of go in or something. As musicians, they were just, I mean, even the first record and some of those other ones have some pop elements, you know, that maybe other people wouldn't think they were pop, but to me, you know, it's like these rhythms and stuff, it's something you can really kind of like move to and gets into your head and is, you know, I don't know, it seems pop to me.
Yeah. Well, I think most of our listeners understand or interpret pop that way as well, just as a song that gets stuck in your mind.
Yeah, hook or something.
Yeah.
You listen to melody. It, and when you stop listening to album, then you start singing the song to yourself or something like that. Maybe just before we go a bit more into your music, I read that you started apparently at Rhode Island School of Design. Is that so?
Yes.
Because I did an interview both with Black Dice and Lightning Bolt, and all of them were part of that school as well, and they were all making music at that time.
Yeah, I used to share a practice space with Black Dice.
Oh, so you knew each other.
Yeah. And Lightning Bolt we used to go see, and Black Dice all the time and stuff, so yeah.
You were into, what bands were you playing in at that time?
That was earlier, before I went to college, but that was still sort of going on, but not so much. I was in this one band called Suck with my friend, and and then I had some other friends that I was playing with, but nothing even that worked out so seriously. But
what do you think of Lightning Bolt and Black Dice?
I mean, those bands were absolutely mind-blowingly amazing, especially back in the day, and it's almost even such a shame that other people didn't have these same experiences that I feel like I had experiencing those bands, because they were just
right
amazing.
Right from the beginning.
Yeah, Black Dice, like, they were even this really awesome, like, kind of hardcore punk band, and it was really aggressive and intense, and then they switched to being this sort of like electronic pop band or something like that. That was like new wave.
They're almost like a disco band or
Totally, and that was wicked too. And then now they're doing all this pure noise stuff, which is really cool as well too. But you know, some of that stuff where they were kind of finding out what the band was all about was so cool. And then Lightning Bolt, they, you know, like the first time you saw them and whatever, it was just mind-blowing, because they would, there would be a band that was playing before them and they would be really great, and the band would like hit the last note, and then you would hear like coming from the back of the room, and you were like, what's going on? And then you turn around and it's Lightning Bolt, and then they start going into this craziest thing that you've ever seen. It was just like, you know, it was mind-blowing. You never saw anything like that. And Sonic Youth actually played in Providence, and they, because Lightning Bolt always used to do this thing at the end, Sonic Youth demanded that Lightning Bolt play after Sonic Youth. So it was cool. It was like Sonic Youth and then Lightning Bolt right after, even though it was the Sonic Youth tour.
That's
where they were headlining and stuff.
Was awesome. I mean, I hear Oliver talk about this a lot, about that period in time in his life with Lightning Bolt. And it's
were you exposed to this more kind of experimental rock music, or rock music out of the box?
Sorry?
Were you exposed
me?
To that?
Yeah. No, I mean, I had very similar experiences to what he's talking about, but with a but probably with maybe a slightly different type of music. But just, you know, a small group of people that were into you know, a small amount of bands that were not at all, you know, commercial or anything, but they were just doing something so cool, you know, that it was just like, blow my
mind.
Yeah,
the things he tells me, it's so cool,
you know,
the things that were going on in New Zealand.
It was cool. I mean, I saw some shows that turned into full-scale riots that were, you know, with police helicopters and people just throwing bottles everywhere, and it was just really cool, amazing stuff, especially as a teenager.
Do gigs like that still happen?
I've not seen crazy stuff like that. I've not seen anything. What about your gigs?
Sometimes, and like we've played some really crazy shows, and they can sometimes get really wild, and even in New York there's some like really cool things that happen in kind of like these underground warehouses and stuff around the areas, but I don't know, maybe I'm just not as young as I used to be, and so I'm not as impressionable by these things.
Once you see
so many things, like yesterday we played this show and we like threw this amp out into the audience and they're carrying it around and Dion's dancing on top of this amplifier and stuff like that, but it's like I've seen that before sometimes, and maybe it's, you know, it's not as,
you get, it's harder,
not
to,
as wild.
Harder to be impressed once you get older and you've seen things like that happening. As a young teenager, when you see that stuff for the first time,
it
affects
so
you a lot, you know.
And so we try to even go crazier and do wilder things, but it's tough.
You mentioned this underground kind of venues in New York. You have one yourself. Do you still have that place?
We still have that, yeah.
That is a like a performance area or space as well. Did you have any cool gigs there?
All the time, almost every day of the week. It was really cool.
What
shows
were some of the highlights maybe for you too? Recently.
Guardian Alien was good. Shannon and the Clams
are cool. Tyson Girl plays here now. OCs.
One of their good shows. I can't remember. There's so many shows all the time. It's really cool. It's really amazing because to live with this happening all the time is just so great for inspiration for music and what's going on. And I see so many cool things. The guy, one of my roommates, books all the bands, and he has such good taste, and he only books things that he likes. So, you know, it could be like jazz or whatever, and it's just, it's awesome.
A lot of different
stuff.
So
cool to be, you know, having those friends.
Like, or the bands you like playing in your living room.
Yeah, totally.
Or bands you don't even know of, you know.
We'll be
working next door and we'll hear something cool coming out of the space. You can go check it out, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Nice. And you still have the Dead by Audio shop located there as well. You know, this thing about Dead by Audio, engineering and interesting music usually don't go well together, at least from my experience, you know. I mean, engineers may be brilliant and at, you know, engineering stuff, but when it comes to creating a piece of nice music, it usually doesn't happen, but with you it's different. You seem to be good at both aspects. Was it the engineering part that got you into music, or was it the other way around?
Music, for sure. It's always been, you know, it's like a need to make music and create something that was interesting or whatever, or find sounds that I couldn't make. And so it's really interest in everything. Living, growing up in Virginia, you know, we lived in, or at least I lived in a town which, you know, if you tried to book shows and stuff, people would be like, nah, or something, you know, because you weren't from a big city or something. So it was really hard to tour and stuff. And I would book all the tours that we would go on. And, you know, we would have to make our own t-shirts and posters and everything. We weren't rich, so, you know, we would be dubbing cassettes all the time and doing these things. And so, you know, it even then turns into you need to build your equipment that you're going to be recording with, and you're going to be need to build the things that you're playing with in a band. And, mm-hmm. you know, you can find some junk for somewhere for really cheap, and you have to fix it and be able to make it work in a band. And you just kind of keep on working on these things, and you so desperately, you know, need to create music all the time. So mm-hmm. you have to do it. And
Dion, are you interested in this more engineering side of things as well?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's good to know. I mean, before I joined the band, I'd always recorded myself and done all that kind of stuff a lot, but I'd never really been built my own things. And it's really interesting, and you get to know your instrument and the way things work. It's fun to do. It takes you away from the music too, to another aspect, which is kind of, you know, a good perspective.
Mm-hmm. Earlier when you were talking about these cool bands performing at your place, you know, another thing I read about A Place to Bury Strangers was in terms of noise, they pointed out this wall of sound, you know, that mm-hmm. that happens usually in a live context. And I was interested, what were some of the gigs that maybe this wall of sound really caught your attention, or that it was really something you found amazing? Maybe I can say my top three gigs I saw. One was, because it was recent, it was My Bloody Valentine. They ended with this really massive sound. And before that, maybe just because of the loudness, was Mürzbau. And probably my favorite gig in context of this sound of all was Godspeed You Black Emperor. Mm-hmm. This of lately. Do you like any of these guys?
Yeah, I like all of that music. The first really crazy show I saw, I think, which was really awesome, was it was this Dinosaur Jr. concert, and the band that played before them was so crazy loud, you know, and me and my friend are yelling in each other's ears to try to talk to each other, and it was like so intense and really loud. And then Dinosaur Jr. comes on, and they're like 10 times as loud as that band. And it was just like so nuts, you know. It was like so such a wild, crazy show that was really, really cool to see that. And then there was this other band in Providence called Force Field, and this guy would just bring in so many speakers, and he would basically have like a microphone with like a slinky or something like that, and it would just be the loudest ear-piercing sound you would ever hear. It wasn't necessarily pleasing, but it was like, it would become such a body experience because it was just so loud and so intense. You know, you had to have your ears plugged up or else you would have died or something like that. And it was, that was always really cool.
We'll probably have to have our ears plugged tonight as well, I imagine.
Maybe.
Each to their own.
You know, we're kind of running out of time, okay. So maybe a few more questions. Cool. Concerning you and popularity, this was a thing I was really wondering about, you know, because when I heard your music for the first time, I think it was before the release of your first album, I think it was some EPs or LPs, EPs or singles, I don't mm-hmm. know, and I thought that, you know, this band is going to be huge pretty soon, and, you know, and when we get to see them in Slovenia, you're going to probably play in some really big venue in front of like maybe 1,000 people, but you're playing in a smaller club tonight, maybe 200 people fit in or something like that. So how do you feel about this popularity? Because I think that you are relatively, you became relatively popular. You know, why this smaller club?
I think we have a lot of haters for some weird reason. I feel like we had people like at the NME that hated us. And then we had people in like some of these magazines like Pitchfork and stuff who...
They don't like it.
And it's weird because it's like this strange thing. And I used to experience this in past bands I was in sometimes too, where I don't really understand. I feel like it's like some weird disgruntled kid who wishes that they were making the same music that we're making and couldn't do it or something like that. Like, for no apparent reason that they don't like us. Maybe... I can't understand if it's our style or something weird or
I mean, we're not the most accessible band in the world, you know what I mean? So,
well,
which is by design. We're not making music to be accessible. We've always, you know, from when I've joined the band, it's always slowly growing, and that's a good thing. Rather than getting, you know, a lot of big hype and popularity quickly. They can go quickly as well. I think we have a good, strong, you know, kind of culty following, and that's the kind of following that people stay with.
Maybe it's also
you know?
We're doing it the hard way,
But it is intentional, probably because I think that just a little adjustment you could get straight into that indie rock kind of line, you know, that is really, really popular.
Maybe.
But it seems that you don't want to compromise, you just...
No, we don't want to compromise.
No. And that's really important to us. And when our first record came out, it was a record that, like, I had recorded completely myself, you know, and it was like, I didn't know if maybe it was the right thing to do to, like, go to some producer or some crap or something like that. But when people liked that first record, it made me feel justified and good about what I was doing and that people were even into what came straight from our heart, you know? And when I knew that there was at least some people who were into this, because I'd been in so many, like, failed bands and other things for so long, it was nice to just know that this was an opportunity. It was huge. And that's the best you want to do. You want to do what you love and you want to follow your heart and your dreams and what is appropriate for you. Once you start taking someone else's advice and whatnot, you're kind of making something that's fake. So it's good.
In the past you were opening for Nine Inch Nails and MGMT, so really big bands, and I imagine that you played at some really big venues as opposed to nowadays. You play in smaller clubs, is this...
We still sometimes open for big bands and stuff, but you know, if someone asks us to play, it's fun to play some crazy place. Why not? You know, I mean, to get this opportunity, why would you pass up? It just seems like, you know, other people would do anything, you know? So if some band asks us to play, like we got asked by the Deftones or something, and maybe I'm not the hugest fan or anything like that, but
it makes for like, a nice experience.
Yeah, it's fun and stuff.
That's also a very cool you know, our favorite one, you know, times to play is probably playing our own shows, you know, and doing it ourselves and doing it exactly the way
what
we want it.
What was that band we played with in Canada? Two shows?
Coheed and Cambria.
Coheed and Cambria. It was a great experience because they were really big shows and the audience hated us. So it was awesome because we got all this bad write-ups and press and hate mails, and it was really cool to be booed by a giant stadium full of people.
And what about the band that you opened for? What did they think about
it?
They
liked us. They
liked
were really
us.
Cool.
I mean, they asked
us to come play. They'd have asked us many times to play. And we always said
no. And they were nice, super nice guys. And, you know, but it's kind of cool. Sometimes you know when people boo that you're doing the right thing.
Another thing, I was interviewing Daniel Miller for Mute
a couple
of years ago, and he was really excited that you signed with Mute
or
released an album there. But now the new one you released on another label, Dead Oceans. How did that happen? Why the breakup with Mute?
Well, it was...
Is it just on a standby, or is it...
Well, it was because at the time, Mute was with EMI, that label, and EMI was going bankrupt or something like this, and so our contract wasn't valid anymore. And so they asked us to re-sign, but for some dumb reason, or whatever, not a dumb reason, but you always kind of think the grass is greener on the other side, so we just decided to try something else out. Mute was fantastic, and they were a great label. And the label we're with now is fantastic as well, but it was nothing against them. I love Mute so much, and it was awesome being on that label and a good experience. We just decided to try something else.
Right.
Yeah.
So now maybe we just have time for this one last question. Yeah, in another interview, Oliver, you were also saying how you like to keep things unpredictable, you know, so that just they don't get boring. Like you don't even put a playlist together like 10 or 15 minutes before the show. Is that still so? It's still the same nowadays.
All the time.
It's like I don't know, I feel like, you know, it's like right at that moment you want to get a feeling of what the vibe is like. And sometimes we'll even change the set list around as we're playing, because it's like you just kind of get this feeling that something else would go in some different way. We have lots of moments throughout our set which are completely improvised, and that's exciting. You know, you hear your fellow musicians making some noises and you play off of these things, and you know, one song turns into something different and it gets changed, and
keeps us on our toes.
That's
well.
Real. You know, I don't like to play along with a track or anything like that and have it be like some preset idea. I think that the most amazing things that happen in your life and the most amazing sounds you could ever make, you can't make them, or you cannot control making them. It's like
unpredictable.
Some other random thing happens where, you know, it's more exciting than you could ever want to.
Sometimes he'll write a set list and it'll be kind of weird and wacky, and you'll have to just wrap your head around it and go, how am I going to make this work? And you might think to yourself, I don't know how. And then you'll get out there and it'll just work and it'll be great. Sometimes it won't be, you know, but that's kind of keeps it exciting for us.
Right. And probably for the people who attend the gig well.
Yeah.
At least those who know what they're coming for.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe just this one last short question. You're playing with Bambara. They open for you. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Bambara.
Can you tell us just a bit about this band, maybe?
They're this wicked band from New York, and it's just such awesome, aggressive noise and energy. And
they're three-piece. They live in, they're from Atlanta. We played with them a couple of times, once in Atlanta, once in New York recently. We saw them in New York, and I mean, I had never really noticed them before, but we just thought they were really cool.
We played with them a couple of times, once in Atlanta and stuff. They've actually been in a band together since they were in seventh grade. So, and just two of the guys are twins in the band. And
they seem like they've got good taste and sound.
Yeah, they're together and got this. It's really awesome and powerful. So
you come check them out tonight if you come to the show.
Excellent. Yep. So thank you so much
for
coming here. Torej, tako kot ste slišali, najprej Bambara, band, ki se ga splača videti, potem še A Place to Bury Strangers, kot rečen, danes ob 9:30 v Channel Zero na Metelkovi. Intervju za A Place to Bury Strangers sem pripravil Goran. Lep pozdrav.
Intervju Radija Študent.